goes the dynamite. Yeah! It's the audio choke here at MMAtorch.com. Thanks for tuning in once again. A love letter to everything mixed martial arts from the 49th state. As always.
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
I'm Matt Collins.
Yeah.
Go!
Wow, you were more indecisive about your name than you know the ref was about whether Chael Sonnen tapped out or not.
Oh, damn!
Look at that, Josh Rosenthal.
Yeah,
don't fresh let that happen again.
Fresh off having a main event where he got all kinds of major props for letting Brock Lesnar survive and then come back. Damn, he gets caught in, you know, like 2 seconds of controversy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's be fair. Chael Sonnen should learn how to tap out properly. And
yeah,
then, you know, maybe not quick tap and then pretend maybe that nothing happened.
Yeah. Yeah, he should.
You think that's what happened? Is that what...
Yeah, I mean, like, there was no, like, quote after the fight where, which he said before in previous fights, like, oh yeah, I did not tap out. There was none of that, but you could clearly tell, like, in the immediate aftermath of him tabbing... that he was like, oh, no, nothing. Everything's cool.
No,
what?
I didn't do that. Yeah. I like Joe Rogan's, oh, no!
Yeah.
Yeah.
He knew exactly what was happening.
Yeah. Well, there is something to be said for, like, the fight isn't over until the ref stops it.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying?
Well, I'm not even necessarily saying that. He did a single tap.
Yep.
Anderson Silva was still holding on at that point. The ref had not stopped it yet, so... You know, maybe he's getting back into it, and then it gets stopped. I can kind of see where that is, because, you know, once the fight was stopped, he didn't be like, no, you know, like you said earlier, it wasn't like during the Paulo Filho match, like, oh, no, I did not tap. He admits to tapping.
Yeah.
I think it was probably, in this case, more of a heat-of-the-moment thing.
Yeah, just as someone who's seen... bad moments like that get really bad in MMA. There was like that 2 or 3 seconds where like no one on the broadcast knew what was happening, and like in the back of my head I'm like, no, don't do it, don't do it, do not restart this fight. I saw him tap out, and like, you know, like I was just I had that like pit feeling in my stomach, like this entire event, like this great card that we just saw, the UFC 117, is going to be completely ruined because something terrible is about to happen. They're going to blow the call on the main event.
And they didn't. They stuck to their guns, and they did the right thing by ending it there.
Yeah.
Now, the winner of the match, you know, I thought it was a great fight. And
that's the champion spirit right there, right?
I don't know. Is it? Maybe he just got lucky. Maybe Chael, I don't know, maybe it's Chael's fault.
I'd say it's a little bit of both. I mean, Chael Sonnen has been known to be submitted. He's got something like 10 submission losses on his record.
Yeah, he does have a great track record.
And, you know, he was doing a real good job of not getting submitted up until that point. But, I mean, Joe Rogan was even kind of calling it before it happened, that he was setting himself up for an armbar before it happened for like a minute. So, you know, there's something to be said for that. And as far as Anderson, I would say that he's got the championship spirit in that, you know, he's down 4-0 and wasn't giving up, if nothing else. I mean, that says something for you. You know, a lot of people would just kind of lay down for that last round and take it.
Yeah, I mean, if you lose your fighting spirit or whatever, and, he weathered the storm, absorbed... I mean, he was outstruck, like, by a 5-1 ratio or something ridiculous like that.
At least. I mean, he spent the entire fight on his back almost, and then even standing up, if you count all the strikes that Sonnen landed in the first round, he might have been outstruck on his feet,
which would
be crazy.
That was the most surprising part to me. I mean, I certainly didn't think... did we all pick Anderson Silva to win this fight?
I think so.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's weird, because coming into the show, I didn't know how I was going to phrase it, but basically, like... I wasn't surprised by the outcome of the fight, but I was kind of shocked about how long it took. Because, we talked about this, you know, on our last podcast about, like, yeah, Chael Sonnen's got really good wrestling. But for me, it was like, you know, what opportunities does he have to win? And the opportunity Chael Sonnen had was to get a takedown, keep in control of Anderson Silva on the ground, and get a decision win. Whereas Anderson Silva had the opportunity to knock Chael Sonnen out or get a submission. And I kind of figured, you know, it'd be a couple rounds, you know, a round or two of Chael Sonnen, you know, working that takedown before Anderson Silva finally caught him in the submission. But as we got farther and farther into the match, we're like, Chael Sonnen actually going to do it? Like that 10% chance he had of winning, is he actually going to get it?
I gave him 30.
30. You're a better man than I, Greg. But, yeah, I mean, it was crazy. That was the most, I think it was the most emotional fight I've seen in quite some time. I mean, because compare that to, like, the other upset we actually saw when Fedor lost, that was just, like, done. You know,
yeah.
That was, so it took so long to process, whereas you're like, you had no time to process that, whereas this fight, you had, like, round by round, you're like, holy crap, Chael Sonnen got through another round, was able to, you know, not get outstruck, which I think was the most surprising part, and then was able to, you know, win rounds, dominate rounds. I mean, I don't know. I think there was a photo of the judges' scorecards floating around up until that point, and like at least one 10-8 round was on there. So I mean, that's what I'm saying, that he was able to dominate so much and even, you know, actually outstrike Anderson Silva. You know, I think get the better of him standing for the most part. So
one thing that I read was that one of the judges' scorecards was showing 40-34, which means two 10-8 rounds.
Yeah, which is insane. Like, I mean,
but really, you know, it's hard to argue with that either, because Anderson Silva had nothing to offer for those first three rounds. And
yeah,
even the fourth round, he still handedly lost. He just landed a few strikes.
Yeah, 10 seconds at the beginning of each round, and then it was all on the ground, basically.
Yeah. One thing that I was saying before the fight was I didn't see Anderson Silva winning rounds, but I didn't see Chael Sonnen finishing the fight, which
right.
really turned out to be pretty correct. You know, it could have been a first-round knockout for all I knew, but I just saw, like, if the round ends, then Chael Sonnen is probably going to be
mm-hmm.
winning, because the only reason the round's going to end is because he's on top.
Yeah.
Any other situation, I just didn't see the fight lasting any longer than that. But, yeah, the thing that really surprised me was that he staggered Anderson Silva standing up, and he's like, Chael Sonnen is not known for being a power puncher at all. I mean, he doesn't even finish people on the ground as a general rule,
mm-hmm.
let alone standing up, where he, you know, is generally known as being kind of a half-ass. And I thought that was really impressive. I wonder if, you know, if that means that he has improved that much, or if he caught Silva off guard, or if Silva hasn't been taking things as seriously because he's been so dominant for so long, and he's, you know, kind of getting the longtime champion syndrome where they just stop caring anymore.
Right, like, and like, obviously I'm not in the head of either fighters, but like the first time it happened, I was like, I think Anderson Silva was just surprised, like, whoa, someone hit me, what?
Yeah,
because, I mean,
sure.
like, you look at his last couple fights.
Well,
I mean,
then he put his hands down too. He's
right.
gonna try to do his head bobby weavy thing.
Well, and that's part of his style, honestly. I mean, even when he is fighting strikers to an extent. But yeah, I don't know if it was just like he kind of got lazy or what. I mean, because yeah, based on his last couple fights, like he's had opponents who just don't want to engage on that level, and you know when they do, they look like Forrest Griffin and
yeah.
get matrixed. So, I mean, yeah, and he was able to do that same style against Forrest Griffin. You know, he didn't really have his hands up in that fight. He was bobbing and weaving there. So yeah, it was just, I think more than anything, it seemed to me, at least from an observer, it was like that scene in, like, you know, movies where, like, the bad guy gets hit for the first time. He's like, what? You hit me?
Yeah.
How did this happen? And then it's just like, yeah, it was crazy. And, like, for me, the moment I knew, like, this fight was something special was, like, really that first, like, 10-second exchange where, like, Sonnen threw the leg kick and Anderson Silva caught it, and then, like, Sonnen did, like, a Power Rangers back roll flip
yeah.
out of it.
Awesome.
I was like, okay, this is going to be an awesome fight. Like, I don't know how it's going to end or when, but this is going to be crazy.
Well, he did turn and forward roll, but yes.
But it was still pretty kick-ass.
It
anyway,
was extremely kick-ass.
I don't think I've ever seen that in a fight before.
Yeah.
Oh,
that was pretty awesome.
Wouldn't you just hate to be one of those suckers that didn't get this last pay-per-view because of UFC 112, you know?
Yeah.
They're just kind of, like, boycotting him, and then all of a sudden, like, what happened?
Yeah.
What? Because they would have loved it. Sure, the ending would have maybe crushed them, or maybe, you know, given their respect for him back, but, you know, that was an amazing fight. And then to have missed that just because you have a grudge against Anderson Silva would be, it's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, that would have been some stuff right there.
Right.
And I am a person who is holding a grudge on Anderson Silva, and I still do, because he didn't make this fight in the least. He won it, but he didn't make it. I mean, it was all Chael Sonnen. But I think it's kind of funny that, like, if this fight would have happened 2 years ago, I'd have been so happy with the way it turned out. It would have been the greatest fight ever, because I loved Anderson Silva. He was fresh off beating up Dan Henderson and James Irvin and making them look like a couple of idiots. And he was just crushing people, and he was being aggressive, or at least, you know, it seemed aggressive. Maybe it was just them being aggressive. And Chael Sonnen was just like some guy, you know, some guy who fought these really boring fights at that time. And, you know, Anderson Silva has gone on to piss everyone off since then by being basically a bastard. And,
So what have you done for me lately? And lately he hasn't, he's danced around a lot.
Yeah, so. He's gone basically out of his way to not fight. And, you know, like, it's not what we're paying you to do there, buddy. I still recognize that he's an amazing fighter, and this just proves it that much more, that he would get the submission with less than 2 minutes left in a 25-minute fight.
Yeah, I mean, it's so much harder to get a submission later on in the fight because you're tired, you're sweaty, all kinds of these other factors.
Well, that needs to just be brokenhearted by then, and, you know, have your body broken from getting punched for...
And perhaps broken ribbed, according to some reports, or some sort of rib injury, maybe?
Yeah.
That was already there to begin with,
who knows?
Though.
Yeah. But,
just put that aside as, you know, in the excuses folder. And
Not to make excuses, but here's an excuse.
Yeah.
That's basically what he said, yeah.
2 years ago, this would have made me so happy, and now it's just like, man, I wanted to see you win, Kale. Hopefully he'll get a rematch down the line, if nothing else, just because I don't really have any other Anderson Silva fights I want to see.
Right, I think there's the super fight with GSP, which actually is more exciting now that we've seen someone who has really good wrestling being able to do that to Anderson Silva. Because I think, and it was an article up on Bloody Elbow, which I'd be able to reference directly except for the computer I use, will like freeze every time I go to Bloody Elbow when we're doing the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like the day after, like maybe the night of... right after the fight, and basically it's like Chael Sonnen reteaches like MMA fans a lesson we already knew: Anderson Silva can't wrestle. I mean, because really, like the last time, I mean, you know, we saw it against Dan Henderson, but we only saw it in one round.
Yeah,
and it wasn't nearly as dominant. But that's because Dan Henderson likes to stand up.
Yeah, he's trigger happy.
Right, but anyone who has like good wrestling is going to be able to take Anderson Silva down. It's just a matter of can they survive after they've taken him down? Are they going to get caught on the feet before they take him down? You know. There's a lot of other variables, but I mean, so I think that makes the super fight with GSP down the line more interesting because GSP is a phenomenal wrestler.
Yeah, well, all three of the guys who have taken down Anderson Silva in the UFC have ended up getting submitted, but you also kind of got to put an asterisk next to all three of them. Travis Luter, because he's got absolutely no cardio whatsoever. He doesn't train, as far as I know. He runs his own camp and just says, like, hey, I do what I want, and then comes in overweight and, you know, goes out after a round.
Mm-hmm.
So then he gets submitted. Dan Henderson was doing great when he was on top, but then gets rocked standing up and falls down and gets choked out in the second round because, you know, he gets this momentum on his side and he thinks, oh, yeah, I'm going to knock him out because I can. And it doesn't work out too well for him. And Chael Sonnen, you know, he survived 23 minutes, but he's still Chael Sonnen, who, you know, is susceptible to jiu-jitsu. He almost seems proud of the fact that he, you know, is not into any jiu-jitsu. He's got all those one-liners about the jiu-jitsu guys.
He didn't seem too proud after the fight. But, yeah, I agree. And, yeah, just looking at his record, yeah, 7 losses by submission. And, yeah, it's just, I mean, certainly you can't expect it to get to a point where you're just, like, immune to submissions, but...
You can get a lot better.
Yeah, like, the problem is that he leaves himself... way more open to them than he should.
Yeah,
I guess is the thing. I mean,
one thing that he's said since the fight is that you know, he didn't know what round it was, he didn't know what time it was, he was in a fist fight, blah blah blah. You know, it started out as a triangle, but I think it ended up being an arm bar more or less that was what he ended up submitting to.
He basically wrapped up 3 of his 4 limbs, I believe. It was something crazy.
You know, like, if I were in Chael Sonnen's shoes at that time, yeah, I'm a big advocate for tapping out when you've got a limb that's in danger of being broken. But in that situation, I bet if he knew how much time he had on, he would have just let his arm get broken and ride out the win. Just to be that guy who derailed Anderson Silva.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's another thing. Not that, I mean, from a fan's perspective, you always want to see him, like, you know, fight to the end of the bell. But from, like, a strategic perspective, you know, like, Chael Sonnen, after round 3, I mean, clearly knew he was winning that fight. Why not play it safe?
You know what I would have loved to see? I saw this posted on another column. But, you know, after 4 rounds, and this is a hindsight thing, of course, you know, now that we know that, you know, Anderson wins, just... See Chael Sonnen dance for that last round.
Yeah.
See what would happen. You know, that would have been a nice nice little end to that, just to, you know, show Anderson Silva that that's not very nice.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Anderson Silva certainly deserves the win because, I mean, he came back out of nowhere.
Yeah, that's a way to keep his head upon him, I guess, is a good way to put it. There were other fights on this card, which we should mention, because, I mean, really, top to bottom, this was a really good card. I mean,
it was a really, really good pay-per-view. Two in a row.
Yeah,
big thumbs ups.
I think we just saw the one prelim, the Stefan Struve Christian Moorcraft.
Yeah, that was a cool fight.
Yeah, and that was I was watching the fight with a couple friends of mine who don't watch MMA really at all, and it was kind of interesting because immediately after the Anderson Silva Chael Sonnen fight, they're like, well, you know, we don't really follow MMA, but I mean that kind of seemed like it could have been staged to set up the rematch. I was like, right, it's a sport, so probably not, but that's cool, fine. It was kind of, we were joking around, but the other interesting thing hanging out with them was we were watching the Stefan Struve Christian Moorcraft fight, and even my roommate who watches MMA a bit, not as religiously as I do, but they're all kind of like, oh, I can't believe the ref haven't stopped this fight in the first round, you know, because Stefan Struve's just on his back taking punches. I'm like, yeah, but I mean. And then I sound like the, you know, like the sadist. I'm like, yeah, no, but I mean, he's still, like, conscious and stuff. He's not bleeding that bad or anything like that. He's moving around.
Yeah.
And he's not being, like, productive from his back, but he's not dying, which,
sure,
again, makes me sound like a terrible person. But they're
I've got some women's matches for you to watch.
Yeah. But they're all like, I can't believe the ref had to stop this fight, man. This is brutal. And then, of course, you know, like, what, 20 seconds into the second round, Stefan Struve's like, oh, yeah, I totally got beat up. Oh, I knocked you out.
Yeah. But he's got one hell of a fat lip.
Oh, my goodness. Was that why we couldn't understand what he was saying?
Oh,
in his
man, get
interview?
A good surgeon?
I think he's Dutch or something, isn't he? That doesn't help.
Yeah, the thick accent and a fat lip. Not very helpful.
One of the fattest lips I think I've ever seen.
Yeah.
In person. It was pretty amazing.
But yeah, that was a cool fight.
I
liked it. I'm a John Fitch fan. I've embraced the grind.
Because he looks like a pirate?
Absolutely not. a pirate, huh?
He's got that beard, that scraggly beard, and then like when he
I guess you're right.
Like grins it up for the camera. He's got like the crooked like smile thing going.
I don't know. I would kind of relate him more towards like the that really suspicious farmhand that all the local farm girls have gone missing, and you're not quite sure if he's the one that did it.
Right, but you're like, if something goes wrong, this is the first guy we're going to go to ask.
I really enjoyed his fight with Thiago Alves, and I'm just thinking, though.
You didn't fall asleep, anything like that?
I didn't.
As we all know, as Dana White and all the MMA fans have told us, John Fitch is boring, right?
Well, I mean, there's something to be said for that, and I just like his style of just, you know, going in there and controlling it, you know, by any means necessary.
I can't believe he doesn't want to stand with a world-class guy
with
on his
pecs
feet
like
who
that
would knock him out if he decided to stand with him for any significant amount of time.
However, a title fight with John Fitch, 5 rounds of that, I think could be a little much. But
well,
don't
worry, because it would be 5 rounds of John Fitch getting punched in the face a bunch by GSP again.
Yeah, that's what happened last time. I think I like the idea of John Fitch more than I like John Fitch himself.
Right, because he's like the everyman, like the really workmanlike attitude, and you know, grind it out, do what it takes to win.
Yeah, you know, he's got the great concept. I'm gonna drag you down into my world and hit you so hard, like so many times, and you're gonna be like, ow! And then he's gonna keep doing it until they pull me off because the bell rang. And yeah, I mean that sounds cool, but when you actually watch it, and it's like, well, got another takedown, and just kind of stretching him out and punching him in the stomach.
I just pulled up his Sherdog Fight Finder record, and yeah, it's kind of humorous, because we all know, I mean, he wins by decision a lot, but
I think his last finish was in 07?
Yeah, last finish was, submission rear naked choke, 07 at a fight night, but since then, he's had all decisions, and all but one of them have been unanimous.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's a great fighter.
Yeah,
he's the second best fighter in the weight class.
Yes.
But like the actual watching of him fighting is not really that exciting.
And this was a more in his defense, this was actually a more interesting fight than some of his other kind of like more I guess painful fights have been.
Yeah, he got a few cool slams in there.
Yeah, and he got back position for a little bit. I thought he was going to get a rear naked choke for a little bit in there on Thiago Alves.
I thought he was going to get the decision.
I was hoping he was going to get a rear naked choke on Thiago Alves. I'm like, "Oh my god, John Fitch is going to finish somebody." But yeah, and like chalk up another win to him, and I think we've kind of joked around about it before, but like if you're in the welterweight division, I mean, like you maybe get like 4 or 5 wins in a row, you got yourself a title shot unless your name's John Fitch.
then
you got to get like 9 wins in a row.
He should be getting a title shot. They said that that was a number one contender fight.
Yeah, so...
Unless Josh Koscheck wins, and then it's all up in the air. Nobody right. knows what's happening then.
Right. I kind of almost hope Josh Koscheck would beat GSP then, so we can have like all this drama build up between like, oh, we said we wouldn't fight unless maybe it was for a title, maybe. So that'd be fun to see. But I mean, either way, I don't know if John Fitch has shown us anything to say that his fight with GSP would go any different. Which isn't say, you know, we shouldn't have them fight, because, you know, when you have a guy who's worked his way up through the division and it's a sport, you got to win.
Yeah.
He's been winning, and I know there's the entertainment aspect of it, but eventually you got to give a guy who's been winning a lot another title shot, whether you think he's going to win or not.
Yeah. Which I don't think he will win, but I agree that he has certainly deserved it, and, you know, really at this point all he's doing is knocking off other contenders.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, let somebody else work their way up to a fight to GSP while he's, you know, busy getting beat up by GSP.
Yeah.
I read a little something, though, that he was saying the possibility of moving up to 185,
mm-hmm.
Particularly if Koscheck wins, because...
He could be the man to beat Anderson Silva. Wrestling, takedown.
You know, like, he's got the submission defense unlike some wrestlers. I could see him doing it. I don't think it would be pretty, but you know what? At this point, I don't care.
Yeah.
Go beat him. but I also think it's interesting that Dana White has been apparently texting Tiago Alves saying, "Yo, you're a middleweight now."
Well, I mean, he missed weight again, and before he had the excuse that like he had an injury he was rehabbing for.
Yeah, hurt his foot, I think.
Right,
so he couldn't get on the treadmill.
It was when he kneed the bejesus out of Matt Hughes. He was rehabbing from some injury and missed weight by a lot.
Yeah.
This one he only missed by like a pound and a half only.
Actually a half pound that he was over, but that's because they give you that 1 pound.
Right.
But if it was a title shot, then you don't get that 1 pound. So, you know, if you're in a number one contender fight, that pound and a half mm-hmm. is really a pound and a half instead of half a pound.
All right. So maybe in the future we can see a welterweight rejects fight between Anthony Johnson and Tiago Alves.
I'd love to see it.
Yeah, that'd actually be a fun fight.
Yeah, it'd be a fun fight, and
guys,
you know,
who can't make welterweight. Yeah,
and they're both exciting fighters.
Yeah, exactly. But that was something I wanted to bring up, because that it happens. People don't make weight, but when it's consistent, when you have it a couple times with one fighter, you're like, yeah, you gotta. I mean, at a certain point, I mean, you're basically losing money. First of all, they take your fight purse.
You're pissing off Dana White,
right? You're potentially endangering, like, you know, your fight in the first place, because, you know, John Fitch didn't have to take that fight.
Yeah, nor did Matt Hughes.
Right, exactly. It's basically like they'll like, you know, have some negotiations. Like, okay, you give up like, you know, like this much percentage of your purse and I'll fight you. Or, you know, if you can make this weight, then I'll fight you. But they don't have to.
Yeah, and the guy who has the choice to accept the fight or not gets paid either way.
Yeah.
So it's like both of those guys took the fight basically for pride and, you know, to probably make Dana White happy.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, in either of those cases, that guy could have been like, nah, I'm going to go home.
Yeah. But I'd be interested in seeing Tiago Alves. I mean, I like seeing Tiago Alves fight. So, you know, if he can get up to middleweight, that's great. You know, I don't know how big of a... I mean, if he's missing weight, he's got to be pretty big. But I don't know what he walks around at.
He's
supposed
to be 200 pounds or
yeah.
so. I don't think he'd be a big middleweight, but he wouldn't be small either.
Right.
He might be a little short. I think he's only like 5'9 or something. So he'd be a little short probably, but he wouldn't be... undersized in terms of weight.
Well, he can start doing the Ken Shamrock Ultimate Fighter training and just start eating steak.
That's right. And steak is delicious, too.
Right. I had to clarify as I was saying that, because I was just going, he could go with the Ken Shamrock style of training, and then everyone would assume I meant steroids, but I did not. I meant he should eat a lot of steak.
And then you said eat a lot of steak, and
yeah.
we enjoy it as well.
Yeah.
I thought you just meant he was going to lose a whole lot.
Oh,
damn! Talking smack about Ken.
Oh.
What you going to do, brother?
I think if he makes the move up to middleweight, I'll like him a lot more. He's kind of one of those guys like Anthony Johnson that I resent because they're basically bullies. You know, they pick on smaller fighters and don't always even make weight. You know, it's one thing, like, weight cutting is part of the game. It's not really something that I like, but I recognize that it's part of it. But if you go out of your way to be the biggest at your weight class and you're just huge and you're sweating yeah. down a ridiculous amount of weight... You at least better be consistent about it. And both those guys have missed weight by a lot.
Yeah.
And Thiago Alves has made a habit of it. And it's like, you know, that's the kind of thing that pisses me personally off, and I think a lot of other people feel that way. I don't see anything really wrong with either of those fighters as fighters. I think they're both fairly entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a hard time liking either of them because of this.
Right. You know, it's like, hey, you got to play by the rules.
Move them up to middleweight, and I'll probably become a fan of both of them.
Yeah.
But for the time being, F them.
Noted. So, Clay Guida, Rafael Dos Anjos, there was a broken jaw involved, apparently.
Apparently.
Which, I mean, I'm not a fighter, but I would imagine if a body part of mine got broken in a fight, as soon as the opponent started pressing on that body part, I'd probably quit.
You
also.
Know, as soon as my face was broken,
yeah.
I probably would have been done then.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're no Rich Franklin, okay,
yeah, or Forrest Griffin.
Yeah.
No, I am not. I am simply a podcaster sitting here in this dark room with two other guys, and obviously I don't have the stuff that makes for a champion. But you know, if your face is broken enough to a point where a guy that burps a lot is just leaning on your face, and you know, then you should have just quit earlier.
Yeah, Clay Guida doing himself no favors with his comparison, being compared to Captain Caveman with the burping on camera, all
Captain
that good stuff.
Caveman.
Yeah, but I mean, he does have that Ultimate Warrior energy, and he doesn't gas as fast, so that's good.
Oh, he's still awesome. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
Clay Guida's the man.
Big ups on him for saying I don't want to hurt my opponent, even though you're in a combat sport. But
yeah, well, he just wants to win.
That's a fine line you got to, because I mean,
he obviously hit him hard enough to break his jaw or whatever
right.
happens.
But yeah, it is weird to kind of talk about it in that context. And again, I was watching with friends who don't watch a lot of MMA, and they're like, well, that's weird. I'm like, yeah, but I mean, you're not trying to kill your opponent, obviously. And I mean, you're trying to beat your opponent, but like showing you're better with this technique or better at punching them in the face, but you're not punching them in the face to make their eyes bleed or whatever. You're just trying to, you know, beat them. And that might happen. But it's not like, I would hope for most MMA fighters, a goal is not to hurt your opponent.
Yeah, well,
it's just a side effect of punching each other.
Well, and I think there's various degrees of hurting him. You know,
right.
Clearly he was trying to knock him out, but it's like, well, yeah. I knock him out, then he wakes up, and you know, yeah. all is well, right? But a broken 30-day jaw.
Medical suspension,
yeah,
like, mandatory.
A broken jaw is going to suck. Like, he's going to have to eat through a straw for a while, probably, or something. I mean,
almost seemed to me like Clay Guida was losing that fight, though, up until then.
I think you could definitely make that argument, yeah. I mean, he was, I think he, you know, pulled victory from the jaw of defeat.
Oh,
on a little more.
Yeah.
It's getting there.
I'd be interested to see how that second round was scored.
Yeah.
The first round, he clearly lost. The second round, he was losing, but then he got that takedown and spent the end of the round on top. And then the third round, he was on top. So, I mean, had it played out to a decision, I could easily see first round for Rafael, third round for Guida, second round, I don't know, where's it going?
Yeah. And I got to say, the thing that it is nice when I have people who don't watch a lot of MMA around, it kind of helps me kind of keep a better track of, like, the scoring and like be more attentive because I'm explaining stuff to them and one of my friends is like, is this like boxing? I'm like, scoring wise, I'm like, yeah, sort of, but there's no like clear point for like when you get a takedown or anything like that. It's all kind of like, you know, based on what else happens in the round and stuff. And like I was using this fight as an example, like for this fight, it could go either way. I mean, like, and I mentioned, like, when Clay Guida got that takedown, I'm like, look at that. Clay Guida was probably losing that round, but he just got a takedown, and maybe the judge would be like, oh, well, a takedown's worth more than getting beat up.
Yeah, huh? Who knows?
So, but yeah, I mean, that was a, I mean, Clay Guida, I don't think Clay Guida has boring fights, even when he loses. Like, that's not how he rolls. For, sometimes to his own detriment, obviously, but,
Yeah, but you know what? He'll still have a job.
Exactly. He's not. He shall be employed for many years to come with the UFC, I believe.
Yes.
So, you know, surprise. I guess aside from the main event, which the outcome again not surprising, but how it happened and the length it went on to surprising. But surprise of the night for me was Matt Hughes beating Ricardo Almeida. You know, I think I picked Almeida, and you know, all credit to Hughes. You know, it's always, you know, I didn't write him off entirely, but. I did not foresee him winning by basically a left hook and then...
then a wrestling hold!
Yeah, a submission that people don't use because it sucks. I mean, just because like it's not a good technique. You don't have a lot of leverage. It's basically just like, I'm going to put my arm around your neck and squeeze hard.
Yeah, I mean, I had picked Hughes to win, but it was going to be... decision or you know, ground and pound at least. You know, he's obviously been working on his stand-up. But the thing that kills me about Hugh is, like, he'd been working on his stand-up for, like, 12 years or something, and he was never any good.
Right, I mean, he always says that. I've been working on my stand-up. Like, right, you slap fight guy. Come on.
Yeah, well, I mean, it comes naturally to some people, and it doesn't come naturally to other people. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a wrestler for 20 years probably before he got into the sport. And then, you know, he learned jiu-jitsu. But jiu-jitsu and wrestling can kind of go hand in hand. There's certain things that you have to untrain yourself, like the rolling over and giving up your back right away, which is a thing that wrestlers will do when they're put on their back. But, I mean, it's the kind of thing that can go with it. Boxing, on the other hand, is completely different than wrestling. And, I mean, it's just the kind of thing that did not come naturally to him. And, I mean, even in his prime, he would always just take down people and then just choke him out or pound him out, do whatever. But he would always want to be on the ground. And now all of a sudden that he sucks, he's out of his prime, he's knocking fools out. What's up with that? I mean, I know that his competition isn't what it was before. The Renzo Gracie thing, it was kind of like, well, yeah, it was Renzo Gracie, though.
And I can't check a leg kick. Yeah,
yeah, he's a Gracie. But, you know, Almeida, he's not stellar standing up, but he doesn't completely suck either. He is at least a mixed martial artist.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Hughes just, like, clocked him. He hit him with some serious power there, too. It was a, you know, one-punch knockdown, as opposed to with Renzo, it was an accumulation of strikes that eventually just wore him down and he collapsed. I mean, this was, you know, almost a knockout that was just followed by a sub. Which, you know, as you pointed out, was a ridiculous sub. I was watching him, and this thing, like, what's he doing? Is he just dragging him down to the ground, you know, like not letting him back up because he wants to be on top kind of deal, and then all of a sudden Almeida slumps down. I was like, oh.
He's asleep. Yeah.
Huh. I'm going to have to see that one again.
Yeah, so, I mean, that was definitely, like, the surprise of the night for me, I guess. But, yeah, I mean, I think Goldberg oversold it, as he might always do after every fight. I would like, perhaps title on the line for Matt, or on the horizon for Matt Hughes. I'm like, yeah, no. Not so much. I mean, granted, it's the UFC, and they like to do favors for their loyal employees. But I don't think we're going to see Matt Hughes get a title. Because, I mean, no one wants to see Matt Hughes get beat up and then retire, do they? They want to ride off into the sunset, right?
Mm. You know, like, I am kind of interested as to how Hughes would do, not necessarily against St. Pierre, mm-hmm. but against, like, an actual contender.
Right.
You know, I've been pretty vocal about, like, Hughes isn't completely done yet.
Right.
Because a lot of people are just like, oh, yeah, he's been picked to lose these last three fights that he's in by a lot of the internet community. And, you know, he's won all of them. The Matt Serra fight was close, but he pulled through on that one. And then the other two fights, he pretty much dominated. And, you know, I'd be interested to see what he could do against a contender. He's
John Fitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, embrace it!
He says he doesn't have much of a desire to fight a up-and-comer, but, you know, maybe like a guy with a name. Maybe even Thiago Alves. He said he wants the rematch. And, you know, Thiago Alves is coming off two straight losses now.
Thiago Alves would like that rematch, too. Mm-hmm. So, again, knee him in the face again.
Yeah, well, let's see what happens if Thiago Alves makes weight.
Yeah, exactly. So, fingers crossed on that. But, yeah, we'll see. I think, but Matt Hughes is definitely in the, I mean, it already sounds like he won't be back until next year.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's going hunting.
He took this fight because so he could go hunting later on this fall.
Yeah, it was a paycheck fight. You know?
Right, it's a paycheck fight, so I think the motivation is something to consider as well. And, you know, he's talked about, you know, he's not interested in, like, you know, fighting guys to have them make a name off of him, that sort of thing. So I don't think he's, and he doesn't have anything to prove. We talked about that before,
yeah.
too. So, you know, whatever he wants to do, that's cool. And he's not fighting, like, you know, scrubs. He's fighting, you know, not the top competition, but, you know.
Like second tier?
Right, exactly. And, you know.
I'd like to see him just mow through camps again. Just thinking. Yeah. Matt Hughes versus a camp. Go!
Yeah. Is there any more Renzo Gracie welterweights in the UFC? Because at this point, he's 3-0 against him, and he's got another Gracie win. So, you know, maybe have him fight Nick Diaz. He's a Gracie guy. Yeah?
Yeah.
Or maybe Dennis Hallman, who's beaten him twice.
Didn't he get kicked out of the UFC for sucking? Because I could have sworn he, like, lost A couple times? I don't know.
But he also beat Ben Saunders on the undercard.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, snap. I didn't know he was even fighting on the
undercard. Yeah, Dennis Superman Hallman, which that was surprising to me.
Damn, Ben.
Yeah, Ben Saunders, who recently, you know, made Marcus Davis sleep well.
Yeah.
Due to knees. Lost a decision to Dennis Hallman, who's...
a decision?
Yeah, no offense to Dennis Hallman, but he's been around. He's a veteran, one might say, a seasoned veteran. He's old, perhaps, is another way of saying it.
But he has beaten Matt Hughes twice.
Right, so maybe we'll get that rematch.
Granted, those were both, like, 9 and 10 years ago. And, yep. You know, Matt Hughes didn't start out as the jiu-jitsu ace that he is now. So.
Right. But I think that's one of those fights that the UFC might give Matt Hughes. Be like, hey, you know, get a loss back, you know.
Get two losses back.
Yeah, exactly.
That's killing two birds with one stone right there.
Make up for it. So, yeah, who knows. We'll see what's up with Matt Hughes after hunting season's done. Do we know what he's going after?
I'm assuming he's going to wrestle down some pigs.
Only the most deadly prey, human, I think.
The most dangerous game? Yes.
Survive it. Starring Ice-T.
If we find out that Matt Hughes has purchased his own private island and is inviting people there, go.
The Butcher Baker?
So the other fight we actually saw, the opening... Was it the opening match? Junior Dos Santos?
I believe so, yeah.
And Roy Nelson and...
That says something about how stacked this card was.
Right.
This was the freaking opener.
Right. I think part of that might have been just like, oh, they know this was going to be an exciting fight no matter who won, probably. And
Even though it was one of the less exciting fights on the card, given how awesome the rest of it turned out.
Right. It was. I think it's fair to say it was very one-sided.
Yeah, I would say that Roy Nelson got his ass, for the most part, handed to him, but, man, he can take a punch.
Right. I think it was one of those fights, like, I mean, clearly Roy Nelson lost the fight, but, I mean, from fan perspective, I don't think either guy's stock was hurt by this. I mean, Roy Nelson took an ass-kicking, but he took it, and, you know, compared to what Junior Dos Santos has done to other guys, and a lot of that was, you know, Joe Rogan and Mike Goldberg talked about it a lot, but, you know, it was like, hey, you know, this is, shows a lot about Junior Dos Santos. You know, some of the questions we had, you know, what happens if Dos Santos gets taken down? What can he do off his back? And, you know... We didn't see that because he stuffed every takedown that Roy Nelson went after him with.
Even
so that bodes well, at least.
Yeah.
But,
and he did a takedown of his own, too.
Which was crazy. Like, that was perplexing to me.
It almost makes me worried about Junior Dos Santos now, though, because he seems like such a one-dimensional fighter, almost.
Right.
That,
if you're one-dimensional, you know. Can stuff a takedown.
Yeah, but the problem with that, though, is doesn't matter who's winning the heavyweight title come UFC 121.
He's going to fight a way better wrestler.
He's
going to
fight a really good wrestler.
Yeah.
So he'll probably end up on his back at some point, unless he gets a really fast knockout.
Yeah, so it'll be a bit of a trade-off, because he's going to fight a better wrestler, but someone who doesn't have as good jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if you get Donkey Kong by either Brock Lesnar or Cain Velasquez on the ground, I think you're in trouble. So
I would rather get Donkey Konged by Cain, though.
his hands aren't quite as large, right? But, I mean... There's not much else to say for that. I mean, like we saw Junior Dos Santos give a beating. You know, first time, I don't want to say that for sure, but I think it was the first time he wasn't able to finish an opponent in the UFC.
Yeah, it was.
It was? Okay.
As far as I can remember, Krokop's the only guy who made it out of the first round, and he quit in the third.
Mm-hmm.
Complained, was whining a little bit, something about seeing double.
Yeah. Oh, he broke my face.
Yeah, what a wuss. But, yeah, I mean, so Roy Nelson certainly was able to take it, which kind of surprised me a little bit, because, you know, the only loss that I've ever seen Roy Nelson take was the Andrei Arlovsky fight, where he got knocked out really quickly once it was stood back up. And granted, I know that Arlovsky hits like a son of a bitch,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, so does Junior.
Yeah.
So, you know, I thought, doing my MMA math, you know, I'm thinking, If this spends too much time standing up, eventually the knockout's going to come. But Roy Nelson kept taking it.
Yeah, I mean, his only he's got, you know, he's 15-5 in his four decision losses and one KO loss to Andrei Arlovsky. So I mean, we were watching that fight, and it was definitely like, yeah, he's doing the Homer Simpson. And he was, you know, not to say that this wasn't a complete domination, but, I mean, Roy Nelson was able to get through with a few shots, but it was clear, like, the gap between, like, Roy Nelson's big country boxing style and, like, actually someone who has, like, legit good, crisp, like, boxing stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, Roy Nelson would be throwing those overhand rights and stuff, and he'd get through with them, but I mean, like, then he'd get hit with three or four shots in response.
Yeah, well, and he didn't get the big shot in,
yeah.
Which...
He was going for it. He was swinging for the fences.
He was going for it, but also probably by the time that he was landing some, because I don't remember him landing much of anything in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
He landed some later, and he was probably already tired out a little bit from getting punched so much.
Yeah, I mean, it was a lot of body shots he took, too, not just... I mean, because he covered his face pretty well, but he took a lot of shots to the body.
Yeah, oh, he had his face really covered.
Right, which, despite what Joe Rogan might have, posited, I'm pretty sure even when fat people get hit in the stomach, it hurts.
It does hurt, I think.
Yeah.
Like going
it's not
out
like,
on a limb there.
Yeah, it's not you're not the Blob from X-Men. You can't just absorb damage. Like, sure, it protects your vital organs better, but I think it still stinks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's skin there, and there's nerves in the skin.
Right.
So, yeah, I would say it stings. As far as the 20 sweaters comment in terms of the organs and the muscles, because you hit the muscle gets weaker. There's something to be said for a layer of protection, but yeah, it's still not going to feel too pleasant. But then again, most of these fighters are probably going in there knowing that, like, I'm going to come out and it's going to sting a bit.
Yeah.
I might have some bruises and cuts even if I win. So that's probably not a huge concern anyway.
Right. All right. I think that kind of wraps it up for the 117. I mean, because we only saw one of the undercard fights. We talked about it. I was kind of surprised to see Dennis Hallman beat Ben Saunders. Other than that, just looking through the undercard results, I guess not a huge surprise, but, I think I picked Dustin Hazlett over Rick Story, but he ended up losing, Rick Story ended up winning, TKO punches in the second.
Damn, Dustin.
Yeah, Phil Davis, big up-and-coming prospect in the light heavyweight division, took a decision, unanimous, over Rodney Wallace. Johnny Hendricks beat Charlie Brenneman, TKO punches in the second, and Tim Bosch beat Todd Brown. Decision unanimous. So, yeah.
That's cool. That's cool.
But, yeah, it was kind of... Well, I guess we didn't see... we only saw one first-round finish on the main card, so I guess it's not too abnormal that we saw only one undercard fight. But, there's a lot of fights that, went into... every other fight went to the, the last round.
Yeah, and then a couple of them... weren't even finished. We had a few decisions there,
right,
too. So.
Right, a couple decisions. But, but I think all the fans got their money's worth, hopefully.
I would say. I mean, it was certainly an exciting card. Maybe a few boring prelims, but screw them. We didn't see them anyway.
So, one of the nice things about this is, we kind of already know where some of these fighters are going because UFC basically said, hey, whoever wins Junior Dos Santos, Roy Nelson, going to get a heavyweight title shot. Whoever wins between John Fitz, Thiago Alves is going to get that next welterweight shot after the Koscheck St. Pierre fight. So we don't have to forecast for their futures really. Although it does sound like maybe there's some backtracking on the John Fitz stuff now, but we'll see how that plays out. But do we want to see an immediate rematch between Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva, or do we want to have? I say strike while the iron's hot. Honestly, it was this first competitive fight in years.
While I'm not a huge fan of immediate rematches as a general rule. Like, who else do we really want to see Anderson Silva fight? There's nobody else for me that I want to see him fight. He doesn't want to move up a weight class anymore. He just said, screw that for now. I don't think George St. Pierre is going to fight him in the immediate future.
Right.
There's the Vitor Belfort talk, but honestly, that's not a fight that I'm hugely excited about.
We should probably tell Dana White, because he thinks people want to see that fight.
Yeah, it does kind of pique my interest, because Vitor Belfort is exciting for that first round.
Mm-hmm.
He's a one-flurry fighter, and once that flurry is over, he really tires out and kind of turtles up for the rest of the fight. And I can see a really competitive first round, perhaps, and then Anderson Silva dancing around for four rounds. Whatever. I don't see a whole lot of chance for Vitor to win that other than maybe a lucky punch. I mean, it's possible. But, I'd like to see the Chael Sonnen fight. It was the first fight that that anyone has made Anderson Silva look bad in any stretch of the imagination in his time in the UFC. Mm-hmm. And he was, 100 seconds away from winning. It's interesting. And, strike while the iron's hot. I wouldn't really favor giving them other fighters in the meantime, just because, you know, there's always the off chance that one of them will lose, particularly Sonnen.
Right.
You know, like, if he were to fight, somebody was talking about having him fight Damian Maia.
Nope.
He's like, yeah, that sounds like a totally bad call.
Don't do it.
I would be okay with him winning the title and then losing it to Damian Maia. That would be just fine by me. But I don't want to see him get derailed by, you know, somebody who's just going to get their ass handed to them by Anderson Silva.
Yeah, well, I think that's one of the problems we've seen in MMA is just they're like a promotion trying to build up a fight too much. Like, oh, yeah, once they win this, this, and this fight, then they'll fight this guy and it'll be awesome. You know, once Fedor totally blows out Fabricio Werdum, then him and Alistair Overeem will fight for the heavyweight title in Strikeforce. It'll be awesome. Oh, no! Oh, no! There goes our pay-per-view money.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would like to see it. Chael Sonnen jokingly said during the press fight conference that they should host season 13 of The Ultimate Fighter to build up their fight and have the rematch. And honestly, you know,
that'd be kind of hilarious.
That would be funny. It would be all time kinds of great airtime for Chael Sonnen, who I love to hear talk. Anderson Silva doesn't speak English, but they could just have Ed Soares there with him.
He secretly speaks English, according to Chael Sonnen.
Yeah.
So, do you think Chael Sonnen, if we do see a rematch between him, can he top himself with like the trash talk? And I don't want to get into the whole like. Because there's that whole, like, Lance Armstrong, like, gave himself cancer thing. I'm like, no, dude, shut up about that. First of all, Chael Sonnen, like, stop talking. And then, if you are going to say something like that, man up and own it. And don't pretend that someone who sounds like you, but's not you, said that. And then,
no,
like,
he sounded like a Hispanic man.
Yeah, it was a Mexican guy, I think. Also, I don't have a Twitter page, but check out my Twitter page. It's this one that I say these ridiculous things on that I totally don't have. But you know, like the trash talk just pertaining to the fight was pretty phenomenal, even if you like take out his like bold-faced lies about other stuff not related to the fight. Could he top that even with like a season of Tough, do you think?
You know, like top? Meh, maybe not, but more of the same would be fine by me.
And he's got more material. I mean, he's got you know, 4.5 rounds of material to work with.
That's right. Not only, you know, has he successfully taken him down without getting submitted for a really long time, but, you know, he rocked him.
Yeah.
You know, he landed some
crazy
shots standing up in his own world.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he's got all kinds of stuff to say. I would love to see that season if it were to be put together, especially since there's potential that Anderson Silva is injured and does need time off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why not? I'm not a fan of having champions be on the show usually because, you know, they should be busy fighting. But yeah, if he's injured, then why not?
Exactly. I agree. All right. So any other UFC 117 thoughts before we... And there's actually, like, more events coming up. We're back into the cycle.
Oh,
this is
there.
Cycle. Yeah, and I totally, like, I'm the one who pays attention to, like, the, you know, like, Bellator and stuff and some of the Strikeforce Challengers cards, and I totally spaced out on them until, I went online earlier today. But, yeah, there's a Challengers card for Strikeforce Friday. And then there's Bellator's, the third season is back on Thursday, which we won't break down too much because it's boring and stuff.
Lame.
But
yeah, Strikeforce, that's cool. I like Strikeforce.
Yeah, and I believe this is their women's 135 one-night tournament that'll determine a challenger against Sarah Coffin. And they're going old school. Like, we don't know who's fighting who until, like, the day of the weigh-in or something like that. Which is cool, but also weird in the year 2010 at the same time, you know?
Yeah, like none of these girls are going to know who to train for or any of that.
Right, and it's also seen the pro debut of Ryan Couture, son of Randy.
Oh, yes.
So
that's cool.
That should be pretty nifty.
He's got some big shoes to fill. Hope he doesn't suck.
Fingers crossed.
Ryan's opponent by first round knockout.
But the fights we do know, Ryan Couture versus Lucas Stark, and the main event... Joe Riggs versus Lewis Taylor. So, Joe Riggs is he owns a pretty horrible MMA tattoo. The Diesel.
His own nickname.
Yeah, and then man,
it's still better than Alan Belcher's.
And Lewis Taylor owns a pretty horrible nickname. Handguns
with a
Z.
All right.
Goodness gracious. I don't know anything about him other than he has a terrible nickname and he's 6-1. 4 TKOs, 1 submission, 1 decision, and a loss by submission. So
I'm going to go with Joe Riggs on this one.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Riggs, I think he's past his prime, safe to say. He's been hampered by injuries and such, I think, in the past. But, you know, I think he's at least a decent
you know, kind of well-rounded fighter.
That's a pretty cool picture of him on Sure Dog, though.
I think they're always a big fan of the bloody face MMA fighter picture. So
yeah, I mean, that's not really the image that I had in my head when I thought of Joe Riggs, but that's a cool picture.
Yeah, thank goodness they don't have one of them with his bleach blonde spiky hair that makes him look like a tool.
Nope, there he is.
They have a pretty cool picture of him up, so
yeah,
big ups there. But Joe Riggs coming off a loss to Jay Heron, who's still in Strikeforce, right, maybe?
I think so, yeah.
Someone's got to fight Nick Diaz sooner or later. But, yeah, Joe Riggs coming off that loss. Yeah, I favor Joe Riggs. I mean, experience. I don't know who Lewis Taylor is. I'm sure maybe he's amazing, and we'll all feel silly after this, but
yeah. I think after this fight, though, Joe Riggs is going to have to cut down to 155. Just stretch that weight cut a little further. You know he used to be 300 pounds? Have you ever seen a picture of that?
I don't want to see it. He didn't have the diesel tattoo at that time, did he?
I don't know.
Oh, that'd be terrible.
I've never seen the picture, but I bet it's hilarious.
Jeez. It's worse than the Anthony Johnson on Inside MMA photo. I don't know if you guys saw that, because, I mean, we were talking about him weight cutting before, and, like,
was he all fat?
Yeah, like, it didn't look like the same person. He was, like, easily 220, 230 pounds.
Yeah, he says he cuts from 220 to 170.
Yeah.
It was, like, 50 pounds.
Like, he had a round face.
Like one of my legs.
And, yeah, goodness gracious, it was crazy. But, yeah, so Joe Riggs, I think we're all taking
absolutely.
Joe Riggs.
Absolutely.
Yeah. By way of not knowing who his opponent is, so
yeah.
He probably sucks.
That seems safe. And as far as the Ryan Couture Lucas Stark fight goes, not knowing...
I'm picking Lucas.
Yeah, I'm sure Strikeforce is giving a guy with the last name of Couture a really challenging fight. He's 2-4. And he does not have a photo in the Sure Dog Fight Finder.
About to be 3-4.
Yeah.
Well, Ryan Couture is 0-0-0 and has a very nice photo.
Yeah. Well, that's because he does publicity.
Yes.
Sure. So, yeah, I'm going to go with Couture on this one just because, again, who knows how good he actually is, what he's picked up from his dad, all that stuff, you know, what kind of training he's in.
Maybe he's just doing this just to impress his father. Like, you'll finally notice me, Dad.
No, it's not Kim Couture.
Oh, never mind.
Well, that's interesting. He fights at 155, huh? Yep. Big weight difference between him and his old man.
That's what the internet tells us. Yeah, but I would assume he's got very good training just by who he's associated with, and who knows if that'll translate. I believe he wrestled back in college or maybe pre-college, but he has some wrestling experience. But again, I think
high
a lot.
School?
Of, yeah, I don't know if high school wrestling would count as a credential. I suppose.
Well,
right?
You said pre-college,
right? Maybe he was like at a tech institute or something. I don't know.
Well, you know, maybe the best thing for him was he seems like a pretty young guy. He just kind of got on the ground floor of mixed martial arting in general. And
right.
That could probably be the best thing for him. And his, you know, if he wants to stick around with the sport for years to come.
And I think the name will help, and certainly we'll see. See what he brings to the table. And I'm going to pick him in this fight for, you know, what all we talked about is training and all that. But, I mean, also, again, with a guy with the last name of Couture, if Strikeforce has any, like, semblance of, like, grooming prospects or, like, trying to make money off of people who have famous last names, I don't think they're giving him a hard opponent. But I guess we'll see. Because
I'm not saying I think Lucas is any good.
Yeah. But and looking at the rest of the main card, it's pretty great because the rest of the fights are really to be determined.
Yeah.
We do know Hitomi Akano is in this, the women's tournament, as is Karina Dam. One name I'm going to mess up badly, Maju Kujala, and Misha Tate, whose name I can pronounce. And I've actually seen her fight. So, you know, I'd say she's probably the early favorite in the tournament, too. She's actually fought Sarah Kaufman before.
How'd she do?
She did all right. She lost. But, you know, it was back in the dark ages of women's MMA, like a year and a half, 2 years ago, when they had three-minute rounds. And when Misha Tate's a wrestler, like, she got improved stand-up since then, but I don't think she'd want to get into a fist fight or a standing exchange with Sarah Kaufman again, provided she gets there. But she's got pretty good wrestling. And if you're fighting in shorter rounds, that's not going to favor you as a wrestler. So I think there is kind of an intrigue there as a rematch to see how that would play out again. But, yeah, I kind of would favor her in this mini tournament based upon what I've seen her fight, seen of her in her fights, and also that I haven't seen many of the other women fight. So there you go.
All right.
And I believe in true one-night tournament fashion, there is an undercard fight that is a reserve bout. Between Liz Kamosh and Colleen Schneider.
It's always good to do that instead of have, you know, the pride fiasco they had where Misaki ended up winning a tournament that he had lost a fight earlier that night to Dennis King, and then beat Dennis King in the finals and won the tournament.
Revenge.
So, yeah, it's cool to have an alternate round.
Yeah, that's good, especially, I mean, you know, it's a contact combat sport. You're probably going to get injuries sooner or later. So we'll see how that plays out. And, you know, it's nice that Strikeforce was finally able to get a tournament together. Because, you know, they weren't able to pull off a middleweight tournament. Who knows if that'll come together once all their middleweight fighters are done serving suspensions for beating up Mayhem Miller.
Or for being Mayhem Miller.
Or for being Mayhem Miller.
Just started following Mayhem on Twitter.
Oh, good. Good for you.
He's funny. Go on.
Yeah. And, yeah, that's all I have to say about that. So, again, not a lot to talk about because we don't know who's fighting who. But it should be fun night of fights, I think. I think the tournament mini tournament format could be an entertaining aspect that we don't see too often in this day and age anymore, especially the one-night thing. I mean, Bellator's back. That's an ongoing tournament, but they're not one-night fights.
Yeah.
And I would imagine it's probably going to be modified rules, or maybe I think in the past it would be like 2 5-minute rounds as opposed to the full 3 5-minute.
That's kind of what Pride did. They'd have like a two-round deal for the first fight of the night, and the second fight of the night they'd have a full fight.
Right. So, you know, tune in Friday on Showtime to find out.
Bum, bum, bum.
Heck yeah. Does Dream have one-night tournaments? I know they have tournaments, but I don't know if they have the multiple fight a night deal like Pride used to have. Cause
I cannot tell you, honestly.
It kind of seems like it's, you know, the organization that came from Pride when Pride burned down. This was kind of built in the ashes, but you know, obviously without the level of competitors, but they seem to do a lot of the same things in similar fashion. So, yeah, just wondering.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. And then, like I mentioned, Bellator's back. No one cares. I mean, Greg doesn't care, right?
Yeah, you know what I think about that.
But we do get to see middleweight champ Hector Lombard fight somebody for not the middleweight belt, because that's how Bellator rolls.
Damn it, Bellator.
That's weird. But later on, he'll fight, you know, the winner of last season's middleweight tournament, but they got to keep him active, so they're going to give him a guy he should beat, and then if he loses, then it'll be weird, and you'll have, like, a fake title, and it'll be crazy. So Bellator's really got their fingers crossed that, you know, hopefully he doesn't lose. But, you know, I believe this first Bellator card is the beginning of the women's tournament, which is the first for Bellator as well.
The 115?
Yeah. So, and they managed to, I mean, 115 is actually a decent weight class for women. It's just a lot of, you know, Japanese fighters, people, well, I mean, unless you're weigh 135 or 145, you're not going to get a lot of attention in the States, but maybe Bellator will change that, because dozens of people watch Bellator, providing there's not a baseball game on.
Yeah.
Because they get preempted and crap, but,
bummer.
Yeah, so lots more MMA come up, and I think we're in this weird situation for our podcast, because there's actually WEC next Wednesday.
Oh.
And we're usually posted online, what, like Tuesday night?
Let's talk about it now. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right, let me pull it up. WEC, it's exciting. It's happening, right? No? Are we excited for WEC?
I'm always excited about WEC.
I love those guys, man. They can just wail on
each
other.
This has got the Bantamweight Championship, does it not? Dominic Cruz?
Yeah.
I like Dominic Cruz.
And Joseph Benavidez. It's, I believe it's a rematch.
Yes.
It is a rematch.
Dominic won last time.
Yeah. Pulling up the full card right now.
But that guy can stick and move, let me tell you. He will bounce all over the place.
Yeah, but for the bantamweight belt, Dominic Cruz, the champ, taking on Joseph Benavidez. We also have Anthony Pettis versus Shane Roller, Chad Mendez versus Cub Swanson, who's got ridiculous tattoos. I think he like has a like palm tree tattoos. And it's like a tourist t-shirt that he tattooed to himself.
A double tree hotel tattoo on him, so
terrible.
He can just stay at Double Tree forever and ever.
But he's exciting to watch.
Isn't he that guy who lost to Jens Pulver?
Oh, I hope not. That'd be bad, right?
I think it is.
Oh, goodness. Well, let's pull that up. My internet's being a little bit slow. Scott Jorgensen also on the card versus Brad Pickett. And Scott Jorgensen, I think, is really, I guess it depends how they match him up. And if he wins, but he's a fight or two away, I think, from a title shot at this point.
Brad Pickett's not too far off either.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that might be a number one contender fight.
And then Zach Micklewright versus Bart Palaszewski. So that is your main card for the...
Should be a pretty fun card.
Yeah, and again, I mean, we've already talked a lot on this podcast, so probably won't go into every single fight. But, I mean, I like that main event a lot. That should be quite a bit of fun, and we talk about it every time we talk about WEC in general, is like these guys know how to bang. Like,
yeah.
They know what's up. I mean, clearly every fighter comes in to fight, but you really don't usually have the gas tank issues, the cardio issues with nearly ever as much, unless you're Jamie Varner, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
But you just don't see it as much as the lighter weight classes in the WEC. And it seems like they're always fighting with something to prove, maybe. Maybe it's because, like, you know, like, hey, you know, we're owned by Zuffa also and are cool.
Yeah, we know how to fight, too.
Yeah, it might be one of those situations. But, no, I'm excited. And it's my DVR is going to be working overtime. But, you know, pulling up the stats now that my internet's finally working on here on Dominic Cruz, 15-1.
Yeah, and the one loss was at a different weight class to Uriah Faber.
Yes, but he's coming off the win over previous bantamweight champ Brian Bowles.
Did you see that fight?
I did.
He whooped his ass.
Yeah, it was weird. It was very weird. I mean, like, clearly we see ass kickings all the time in MMA, but, like, you know, it's a championship bout. And, I mean, Brian Bowles wasn't, I mean, he beat the bejesus out of Miguel Torres. Like,
yeah, but so did...
KO'd him.
So did Joseph Benavidez.
That was after...
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
That was after Brian Bowles punched his will out of his face. So,
yeah.
But, yeah, no, it's... I think part of it is, like, for a while, it was, you know, Uriah Faber and Miguel Torres were kind of like
they were the two big draws.
Yeah, they were the rocks, you know. They were at the top of their divisions. They were the... you know, the champs, and they had been the champs for a while, and then, like, both of them lost, like, you know, within, like, the, you know, a year of each other, and just, like, chaos ensued. Like, you know, Jose Aldo's taking care of that.
Yeah.
But we still haven't had a steady champ after Miguel Torres went down. We'll see.
Yeah, they haven't had a whole lot of time since then.
Yeah.
I mean, at least Mike Brown defended the title once or twice.
Right.
And then... And then he lost it. Now Jose Aldo has defended it once.
Yeah.
But
we'll see if Dominic Cruz can defend it for the bantamweight belt.
I think so. I mean, for one, this is a rematch of a fight that he won the first time. And secondly, he's fun to watch, so I'm going to pick him.
And you know, for people who aren't familiar, which has included me until I looked up the record, this is not like a rematch of like a fight like 5 years ago in like the IFL or something.
Yeah, it was
like
a year ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was last August.
Yeah.
yeah, Dominic Cruz beat Joseph Benavidez decision unanimous at WEC 42, the same WEC event where Brian Bowles beat the bejesus out of Miguel Torres.
All right.
We've come full circle, I guess.
Heck yeah.
So they fight again. Yeah, and I'm with you on that. And again, you know, not having as much knowledge on all these fighters as I do with, you know, some of the UFC or Strikeforce guys. But, you know, what I've seen out of both guys, I don't know if there's been, like, huge leaps and bounds out of, you know, Joseph Benavidez, where I'm like, oh, yeah, he has something new to offer that he can bring in against Dominic Cruz. So,
look up Cub Swanson. See if he was the guy who lost to Jens Pulver.
Yeah, good call. But, yeah, Cub Swanson taking on Chad Mendez as the internet loads. Oh, that is dreadfully slow.
Oh,
looking
net.
At the, looking at the progress bar there.
Let's see if I can find it on my phone faster.
Oh, I got it over here.
The internet will know.
He is!
Oh, man.
And that's like Jens Pulver's last win, too.
Yeah.
That was not long ago.
Yeah, 07. Yeah.
Why is it such a big deal?
Because Jens Pulver is way past his prime.
Yeah, that was his only win in the past, like, 5 years, I think. I mean, that's like, you know... Not quite as bad as losing to Ken Shamrock now, but
right.
It's in that territory. Mm-hmm. I had some great smack talk going into it, though.
35 seconds in the first round to a guillotine.
Yeah.
That was quick work, too. Yeah, but Cub Swanson, you know, kind of a bit of back-and-forth record over the past couple years. But, I mean, before that, he was really solid. His first fight ever was a loss, and then after that, he, you know, didn't lose for, like, 3 years. Take that for what it is. You know, it depends on the competition. But yeah, the Jens Pulver loss was the first in the WEC for him, and you know, got back on his feet a little bit until he ran into a little guy named Jose Aldo.
Mm.
And I say ran into, he ran into his flying knee.
Yeah,
and
that'll hurt.
Yeah, it was not pretty at all. But he's bounced back since then, taking a win over John Franchi. I don't know why I want to throw, like, the Franchini.
Because it sounds awesome.
Yeah, it sounds a lot better, just Franchi.
Yeah, but those words aren't, like, those letters aren't there. It was,
You were just riffing it.
Just trying. I was just trying. But, yeah, I don't know. It's hard to say because, like, I think the whole I can't help it, the what have you done for me lately mentality in Cub Swanson, you know, even though he's coming off of a win, I still have those images of, well, first of all, even though it was years ago now, the Jens Pulver loss is just, that's sad.
Really? Yeah. That hurts you, huh?
And it shouldn't. It really shouldn't because it was years ago, but, like, you know, like, really? You lost Jens Pulver?
You know, you're only human, Tobin. Yeah. Yeah, you can't be, you know, completely impartial all the time.
Right. The flying knee doesn't help either, but no. That was to the champ in that division.
Yeah, so that's okay.
Yeah.
The smack talk going into the Jens Pulver fight was pretty fun, though. Cub Swanson was like, he's scared of me, he's scared of me. And Jens Pulver was like, man, I just fought BJ Penn.
But I guess we should talk about his opponent. Cub Swanson taking on Chad Mendez, who does not have a terrible tattoo for SoCal.
Or does Chad have any terrible losses on his record?
Right. He is undefeated, 7-0, two TKO or KO victories, two submissions, three decisions.
And he's in Team Alpha Male with Uriah Faber in them.
Yeah. So up-and-coming prospect, I think, safe to say.
Yeah, I'm going to call victory for him.
Yeah, you know, I don't... He's been on the WC cards before, but I think this might be the first time...
Televised, perhaps?
We might see him on the TV for sure. But yeah, his last two fights in the WC, victories, decision victory over Eric Koch, and submission guillotine over Anthony Morrison.
That's so cool.
Yeah, Cub Swanson's got some power in him. He always puts up a good fight, unless it's Jens Pulver.
Or Jose Aldo.
Or Jose Aldo's knee, yeah. But, you know, he comes to bang. But, yeah, I mean, Chad Mendez, I think, is probably going to eke this one out.
I would say so.
Yeah, I think the Team Alpha Male...
they're a good team.
Yes, they are. They're Alpha. How can you not be good with a team name like that?
The only thing that gets me, though, is how are they going to have more than one Alpha Male there?
Yeah,
who's really the Alpha Male?
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, should it be like Team Alpha Males, or... Now we're all confused. But, yeah, and it's been a while since I've seen Cub Swanson fight, honestly, but, yeah, I mean, I don't know if he's that much of a versatile fighter. I think he's got, you know, pretty good stand-up, like Zabang and stuff, but other than that, I don't know. We'll see what he has to offer next Wednesday.
All right. So it's a Wednesday card, huh?
Yeah.
It's pretty unusual for WC. They got their Sunday night thing locked down, usually.
Yeah, I think they throw in a Wednesday every once in a while. I know it's happened before, but yeah, it is kind of unusual. You know, another fighter on the card, Scott Young Guns Jorgensen. So hopefully that's a reference to the amazing film of the 90s.
Absolutely.
Kiefer Sutherland.
I want to see City Slicker Tad Winslow in there, too.
Whatever. Oh, goodness. But Scott Jorgensen, he's you know, rattled off four wins in a row in the WC. His last loss was to Antonio Banuelos back in June of 2009.
That was a while ago.
WEC 41, Brown versus Faber 2. Since then, he's rattled off four wins, two of them decisions. Had a pretty nifty guillotine choke recently over Chad George in March. I think it was just because it was a standing guillotine, and it was just kind of like the angle was weird, but he got it in there, and that was that.
Aha, that's all she wrote.
Yeah,
that'll show him.
And his last win actually is avenged the loss over Antonio Banuelos. Got a unanimous decision back WC 48. So I don't know. I think Scott Jorgensen is you know, probably next in line for a shot at 135. We'll have to see. Of course, he's got to get past Brad Pickett.
That's not easy.
Brad One Punch Pickett.
Oh, really? Is that his nickname, or is that just a?
That's his nickname.
I don't know about that. Maybe like two or three punches.
Yeah, like big knockout or something like that. You know, foot to face. You know, those are kind of like loftier nicknames than you should go for.
Five-finger death punch.
Ka-cha!
Because when you get a name like that, like, that's really setting expectations. Like, I would have a name like Greg Pillow Fist Roland. Well, maybe, that way if I ever knock anyone out, they will not see that coming at all.
Well, maybe I'm looking at his record, and maybe that's part of his plan, because he has actually 9 submission wins.
Oh, there we go.
He's got 6 TKOs, 4 decisions. It's 19-4 overall.
All right, man's a genius.
Yeah, he's
I take Brad Pickett.
Yeah. Because he's crafty. He's got a crafty nickname. He lies to people. His last win, according to the internets, was over Demetrius Johnson at WC 48. Unanimous decision. And, you know, he's riding in a pretty lengthy win streak, it looks like, going back to 07.
That's significant.
Yeah. Fought in K1 a little bit. Some cage rage. This is only going to be, looks like, his third fight in the WEC. And... I'm not going to pick him, though. I'm going with Scott Jorgensen.
Crazy.
I know, right?
Well, with a sweet nickname like that?
How can you pick against a man with one punch power?
Scott Jorgensen has cool hair? I don't know.
Oh, okay. That's understandable.
Does he have a beard?
I've seen him fight more.
Okay. Yeah, we're trying to go for the most superficial ways that people will start winning, you know?
He has a skin disease.
Ooh, now that's superficial.
Yeah, it is.
Get that guy a makeover. Great. Oprah.
Glad we went there. Oh, man, we didn't do our breakdown of who won with beards on the UFC card or the Brazil versus USA rundown. We'll get to that after this.
Okay.
Let's
hurry up. I want to do those.
Yeah. get to that stuff. Get this fighting business out of the way. Go back to the silly stuff. But, I mean, yeah, it's like we mentioned, plenty of other fights on the card, but, I mean, those are the ones that, you know, kind of I have my eye on. The other one, I guess, Anthony Pettis versus Shane Roller, another one to watch out for. Anthony Pettis. His nickname's Showtime. Strikeforce should sign that guy immediately.
Hell yeah, he should.
With a nickname like Showtime.
Showtime! It's time to go for show. Yeah.
But,
what channel are they going to show him on? If I was a fighter, I'd get a nickname like Spike TV.
Yeah, absolutely.
And tattoo it across your chest.
I'm getting the NBC peacock etched into the back of my hair.
That does remind me, I believe Bellator did sign a fighter who has a Bellator tattoo, but it's not because of the fight promotions, because Bellator means like warrior in Latin or something.
Oh.
So it's just a coincidence, but also kind of weird and silly.
But I bet he'd never get a job in the UFC now.
Probably not. He'll be blacklisted. And I hope he doesn't show up in a video game that's not the UFC either, because then he'll be double blacklisted.
Yeah. Although Dana White might hire him if he gets another tattoo of, like, the big red circle with a line through it around Bellator.
No. That'd be awesome.
No,
that'd be a good modification, yeah. But back to Anthony Pettis coming off a win over Alex Karalexis, which is not a thing in 2010, I don't think.
Yeah, you know, they keep hyping up Karalexis. I think I saw that fight, and they were like, yeah, Karalexis is so awesome. He's got that big overhand right, and it'll hurt you if it hits you. It was like, so? He ain't going to hit you.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't done horrible in the WEC, but he hasn't exactly done great, especially in recent years. Karalexis, yeah, not a great... I don't want to say it's not a great notch in the belt, but, you know... I don't know if that tells you much about Anthony Pettis. He didn't lose to Alex Karalexis. I guess that's a good thing. Beat him by a submission triangle choke.
Yay! Wasn't Karalexis on The Ultimate Fighter like 1,000 years ago?
Yeah, season one, man.
Man. You know, so many of those season one guys like did really good.
Yeah. A couple of them just dropped. At least Karalexis is still fighting. There's like the one guy who basically, you know, took one for the team and fought a teammate and lost, and then, like, you never heard from him again.
Oh, Bobby Southworth?
No. He lost in Strikeforce recently.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I thought he quit.
No, I believe Bobaloo beat him for the Strikeforce light heavyweight title back in the day.
Oh, shit.
A couple years ago.
So he was all old.
Yeah.
Like, they were talking about how he was
the
grizzled
was
veteran.
Yeah. I think he still fights every once in a while, but, yeah, but for every notable Ultimate Fighter Season 1 winner there's maybe like, you know, one or two drifting out in the ether, never to be heard from again. But, man, that was a really big rabbit trail coming back to the Anthony Pettis-Shane Roller fight.
Yeah, we get to it. You know, we're going to take the long way around.
Well, I literally forgot what we were talking about. I had to look back at the fight card. I was like, who are we? Anthony Pettis-Shane Roller. Okay, got it. Shane Roller, 8-2, two TKOs. Or KOs, five submissions, one decision. His losses both come by KO or TKO.
Ooh.
And his last win over Anthony Njokuwani. I remember that fight because Njokuwani got in a lot of trouble afterwards because he, like, you know, maybe made disparaging remarks about his sexual orientation and stuff.
Because
that's classy. but it was basically like, you know, whiny, like, oh, I can't believe he fought me on the ground because only homos do that in mixed martial arts. Where the ground game is a totally legitimate thing to do because it's mixed martial arts.
Yeah, Yeah, my attitude on that is maybe you should see how you do against kickboxers and kickboxing then.
Go fight K1.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's got its own sport.
Yes.
Over in Europe.
Exactly. But Shane Roller, submission rear naked choke over Anthony Njokuwani, who had some hype going into him before. He had that... Njokuwani's head has good stand-up, very good stand-up, in fact, and he's got that highlight reel head kick.
To that guy who was, like, running away?
Chris Hordecki, who was running the opposite direction, and still managed to kick him in the front of the face somehow. Pretty crazy.
Well, yeah, he's got, like, this hook of the foot right, that just wraps around the face as you're facing the opposite direction.
He's got him.
Yeah, it sucks. Like a hockey stick.
Yeah.
Whack.
So, Shane Roller beat him up, so that's something.
Yay!
I don't know. Really, from this fight, it's kind of a coin flip for me almost. But maybe I should judge it by something not pertinent at all. But
who's the underdog?
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Well,
I was going to go by profile picture. Who looks more fierce?
Ooh.
All right. Let's
you should go by theme music.
Well, okay. He looks kind of fierce, I guess.
Anthony Pettis has got some facial hair in his profile picture.
Yeah. Describe the facial hair. Is it a goatee?
He's rocking the Flavor Saver.
Oh man. Yeah.
No, I got
Shane Roller. Shane Roller looks angry.
Looks like he just killed somebody.
He's got the Russell Crowe thing going on
and
there.
He's like bleeding out of one eye in his fight finder picture. So yeah.
That's the new Robin Hood.
Aside from these guys both being like, good fighters and stuff, Shane Roller.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go with him on that. And that's all I got to say about the WEC card.
Yep.
Well,
it's more than I had to say about it.
Yeah. So we'll wrap that up in 2 weeks because it's a midweek fight cards are bad news for our podcast, is basically what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Remember that one, like, Monday night UFC card they did, and it was murder for us. We had to, like, come in on a Tuesday or something.
It was awful.
Yeah, it sucks.
Terrible. Terrible, terrible.
We are
things.
On a schedule, okay? We like how it is, and how we do it is fine.
Yeah. If you're going to have a card, do it on the weekend, guys.
Exactly.
Please.
That way we can go to bed at a reasonable time on a weeknight.
Yeah. And that way we can stay up late and drink and watch fights.
Woo!
Don't have to worry about coming into work hungover.
Well, yeah, what's going to stop us?
Or whatever.
I'm going to miss this WEC.
Okay.
Just throwing that out there, I'm not going to watch it.
On purpose?
Be out of town.
Okay. I like that's a bold statement. If you're like, I'm just deliberately
I'm
not
just
going
not
to watch,
gonna watch it.
Yeah,
just, don't care.
I would love to see it. It's going to be cool, yeah. I'm sure, but not going to see it. So when we come in 2 weeks from now, you guys will be like, "Oh man, how about that WC?" And I'll be like, "Huh?
What?
You will actually have forgotten that it even happened."
I will. Well, I'll forget that in a few minutes.
Yeah.
I'm like a goldfish when it comes to WEC. Mm.
So we mentioned earlier we should wrap up with the whole breaking down the nationality fights and the beard fight
because
on
really,
UFC 117.
It's all about different people going against each other, you know.
Right.
So it's all about the class and the race and country.
Well, I mean, because the main card of UFC 117 was all USA versus Brazil.
The whole thing? Oh.
Yep. I believe so.
Wow.
So Junior Dos Santos got a win, so that's one for Brazil. Matt Hughes beat Ricardo Almeida, that's one for America.
1-1. Woo-hoo.
Guido over Dos Anjos, 2 for America.
Yeah.
John Fitch, 3 for America.
But kind of, sorry, he kind of looks like one of those people that would claim Minnesota as like part of its own thing, you know? Detract from the United States.
Purdue University as its own independent sovereign nation.
There
you
go. Thank you.
Yeah. And then Anderson Silva. So I think USA takes it 3-2.
3-2? I did not even notice that watching this card that it was... they didn't market that at all. They totally could have.
Like I remember seeing like something online where like they like in Brazil they were marketing it as that. But like I didn't see one thing mentioned like in the USA like any of the promos or anything like that. As far as sweet facial hair goes... I guess Anderson Silva had, like, the evil Spock facial hair going on.
Mm-hmm.
And he won. John Fitch has the pirate beard going on. Or, like, you know, domestic terrorist, I guess, if you're Matt, if you're into that thing.
I don't think I used that phrasing.
I used that phrasing, but you were dancing around that.
I thought he was going for serial killer.
Okay, that's better.
I was going all over the place with John.
Right, but so I'll just call him a pirate because no one's offended by pirates anymore. Pirates are cool.
Pirates are stupid.
Why don't you just call him a domestic terrorist then?
I didn't know there was a one or another. I should be able to say whatever I want to say about him.
Okay, so 2 for the sweet facial hair. John Fitch has a legit grown man's beard. No matter what you think of
whether it's a pirate beard or a creepy mountain man beard.
There you go.
Clay Guida, no facial hair.
No facial hair, but he's got the cool long hair thing going on.
And he's
so
got that burp, and he even moved that guy's head and everything. Yeah.
Why doesn't Clay Guida have a beard? That's what I want to know, because like, he'd look like...
How else is he going to get the girls, man? He can't get a...
He lives with his mom.
Does he?
No, he doesn't. He lives in Winnebago.
Oh, right.
I've seen pictures in the UFC magazine.
Both of those are
featuring
cool.
Randy Couture on the cover.
Yeah.
He lives in Winnebago, huh?
Yeah.
Well, he parties that much.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, maybe it's the lifestyle. I don't know.
I think he only lives in it when he's like in a training camp or something. Like instead of moving out there into a hotel or like having a second place, he just drives a motorhome out there.
But I know Clay Guida obviously listens to our podcast, but he should rock a beard in his next fight. Like, yes. I think that'd be a good look for him. Like, I mean, really get the caveman look.
Now are we talking about, like, a full beard or, like, you know, parts of a beard, perhaps?
Yeah, crazy Keanu Reeves patchy beard.
Or maybe just a mustache. That'd be creepy, right?
Actually, what I'd like to see is the anti-mustache, where it's the beard, but the mustache part is shaved, so it's like the sideburns and the goat. Yeah. I think that would go quite nicely with his long hair look.
I think he should go for a Fu Manchu type deal, but the really old school, like, Japanese sensei one, where it's just a foot of hair on each side of the mustache that goes down to his nipples.
Mm.
I think that'd be scary as all hell.
I think that'd be a disadvantage in a fight, though.
Like, and that would take him quite a while to grow.
Yeah.
Although, on the flip side, if he were to have just a regular Fu Manchu, he'll start to look like that guy from Dusk Till Dawn and Desperado and a thousand other movies.
Danny Trejo?
Yeah.
The guy with the woman tattoo on his chest?
That's like
the
one. Mini Danny Trejo. That's
Machete?
Great. Yeah. Other than that, I mean, Roy Nelson in the past, I forgot because his mullet was so amazing, but he wasn't rocking any facial hair.
Yeah, he was.
Was he rocking his
usual beard.
Okay, he was rocking the beard, and it didn't help him.
Yeah,
so,
well, it did help his chin.
Right, apparently, but he did not win, so that's a loss for one sweet facial hair.
Dustin Hazlett lost. I didn't see him at this fight, but he had a beard recently.
Yeah, in the past, he's been rocking some pretty sweet facial hair. And someone else I know who usually is rocking a grown beard is Johnny Hendricks.
Yes.
And he beat Charlie Brenneman on the undercard. So facial hair really won. Facial hair in America.
Woo!
That's
a new day, America.
Yeah, unless you're Chael Sonnen, because you had neither.
True.
But he was American.
He was American, so it didn't help him. And he didn't have sweet facial hair, so too bad. Maybe if he had both, I think that would have really helped.
Yeah. But he was going against the facial hair, too, so that would have been the only facial hair versus facial hair match on the card. Although, Boch, he's often got, like, a beard. It's just that his is kind of short and, like, the same color as his face, so it's kind of hard to notice sometimes.
It doesn't really stand out. Like, you got to go above and beyond and, like...
He needs to dye it, like, green or something. Then we'll notice it.
Yeah, frost it, something. Get something going on there. Okay, so clearly we've exhausted MMA topics, unless there's any MMA news you guys have seen. I just scroll across MMA Junkies page recently and saw that Fabricio Werdum is confirmed out until next year with, I think he had to have surgery or something like that. So that's...
okay.
There goes the Fedor rematch or Alistair Overeem title fight.
You know,
but I guess that's nice that they have a reason to give Fabricio Werdum the shaft in his next fight, because they can just put it off now.
Strikeforce is really just like... trying to make me not care or something.
Right, because like immediately after he beat Fedor, like, oh, well, he should fight for the heavyweight belt, and he already beat Alistair Overeem. Perfect matchup. And they're like, well, maybe. People still want to see Fedor versus Overeem. I'm like, yeah, eventually, maybe. But how about a guy who actually won a fight get a championship shot?
Yeah.
But now that he's out of injury, they can just don't even have to worry about it. Just push that on the back burner. Deal with Fabricio Werdum later, Strikeforce. Yeah. So, we'll see. We'll see Fabricio Werdum next year.
And we will see you next week here at MMATorch.com, right? Is that a good point?
Yeah, whatever. We had nothing else to talk about.
All right, cool. The Audio Choke here at MMATorch.com. Follow us on Twitter. We're on Facebook, just at Audio Choke. As always,
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
I'm Matt Collins. We'll catch you next time.
Audio Choke.
Speaking of it, did you watch Cloverfield yet?
No.
Okay.
I saw that.
I'm getting to it.
It was all
right. Oy vey.
We rented it from the Elastic Club, and as we were renting it, some guy was like, that movie fucking sucks. Ooh, movie's so stupid.
10-second review, yeah.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, no, Matt, no worries. It's just when I gave it to you, you're like, no, I'm going to watch it tonight or tomorrow. So you, like, gave yourself a deadline and then totally blew past it.
I'm not very good at homework.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
Even when I set it for myself.
Right, just don't set goals for yourself next time when I let you borrow that.
You know what? I really try not to.
Yeah, just lower the bar next time is all I'm saying.
Okay.
You'll notice I never said when I would watch dinner for however
five.
Many.
Well, you probably won't anymore because I oversold it.
Now I'm going to ransom it.
So you haven't watched it yet?
No.
That's fine. No pressure. Whatever. I don't care.
You know why? Because I didn't tell you when I was going to give it back to you.
You certainly didn't. I never told you when I was going to give it. Never mind. Look, I did see Mystery Man Team, and it was good.
Mystery Team was good. And Mystery Man was also good. It was ahead of its time, though.
It was.
Because it was like the superhero spoof movie, the good one, that came out before all of the superhero movies.
Yeah. I think you'd really like Mystery Team, Greg. It's funny. It's like, you know.
I like funny
They go
movies.
To a strip club and get boners. Yeah. It's hilarious.
Ooh.
Well, there's also the line like, oh, man, there's something fishy going down at the docks. I think it's fish.